Welcome to your personalized deep dive. You wanted to understand how the geography of ancient Israel shaped its history, especially as it relates to the stories we find in the Bible.
Okay.
So we're diving into this academic lecture that breaks down the region, going beyond just place names to uncover the why behind historical events.
What's fascinating about this approach is how it reveals the land as an active player, not just a backdrop.
Right.
It's like the rocks and valleys have their own stories to tell.
I like that.
Stories that help us understand why things happened the way they did.
Okay, so let's get started. The lecture begins with a region that, at first glance, seems pretty desolate.
Yeah.
The Judean wilderness.
Right.
But the expert describes it as a testing ground, which already hints at something more intriguing, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. The Judean wilderness isn't just empty space.
Yeah.
It was shaped by this phenomenon called rain shadow. Imagine a wall of mountains blocking the rain clouds, leaving the land behind them parched and dry.
Okay, so no rain.
Right. That's how you get this stark landscape with chalky soil, exposed flint, and those dramatic canyons called wadis.
These wadis sound almost like scars on the landscape.
Yeah.
Deep and unforgiving.
Yeah, very much so.
But then I came across a mention of a hidden waterfall in the lecture notes.
Oh, yeah.
An oasis in this dry and dusty place. That's pretty surprising.
It is. Wadi Urugot is a great example.
Okay.
It has a spring that feeds this unexpected waterfall, creating a burst of life in the middle of this arid region. It's this juxtaposition of harshness and hidden beauty that makes the Judean wilderness so fascinating.
So the Judean wilderness isn't just empty space.
No.
It's a place of contrasts, a place where survival is a constant challenge.
Right.
And that makes its connection to biblical events even more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The lecture mentions the Israelites' journey through the wilderness.
Right.
David hiding from Saul in its depths. Even John the Baptist and Jesus spent time there.
That's right. The wilderness served as both a refuge and a testing ground. A place where people were forced to confront their limitations and their faith. Think of David hiding from Saul in those deep, winding wadis.
Oh, wow.
The landscape itself created natural barriers, adding to the drama and danger of their story.
Yeah.
It's like the wilderness was a character in their conflict.
Right.
Yeah.
It's almost like the wilderness stripped away everything except the essentials,
mm-hmm.
pushing people to their limits.
Yes.
The lecture even mentions Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found,
okay.
and a whole monastic movement that chose to live in this harsh environment. It makes you wonder what drew them there.
It speaks to a powerful human impulse, doesn't it? This desire to withdraw from the world,
right.
to seek solitude and a connection with something larger than oneself. The wilderness, with its stark beauty and isolation, offered that opportunity.
Yeah.
It's as if the absence of worldly distractions allowed for a deeper, more profound spiritual experience.
It's fascinating how this one region could hold so many different experiences. We have this idea of the wilderness as a place of refuge and spiritual searching.
Right.
But then there's Masada, Herod the Great's fortress, a place of power, and even extravagance.
Yeah.
It seems like a strange thing to build in such a harsh environment.
Masada is the perfect example of the contradictions we find in the Judean wilderness.
Right.
Here you have this opulent fortress, complete mm-hmm. with palaces and swimming pools, rising up in the middle of a barren landscape.
Wow, that's crazy.
It speaks volumes about Herod's ambition and his desire to leave his mark on the world. And of course, its dramatic end as a last stand against the Romans adds another layer of tragedy and defiance to this place.
It's incredible how the same landscape could inspire such different responses. From spiritual seekers finding solace in the wilderness to a king asserting his power through grand construction, the Judean wilderness seems to have shaped human actions in profound ways.
And that's just the beginning. Each region of ancient Israel has its own unique character,
yeah.
its own set of challenges and opportunities that shaped the lives and stories of its people.
All right, so we've explored this idea of the Judean wilderness as a place of extremes. Stark beauty, refuge in danger, spiritual testing, and echoes of power.
Hmm.
But your notes mention one more location in this region that I'm really curious about. En-Gedi.
Ah, En-Gedi. It's an oasis fed by a spring, a true haven in the wilderness. And it has a direct connection to King David and his writings in the Psalms. We know he hid from Saul in this region.
Right.
And in the Psalms, you find these powerful expressions of longing and dependence on God, often using the imagery of water and thirst.
That makes sense. Imagine being surrounded by this dry, unforgiving landscape and then suddenly finding this lush oasis with fresh water.
Right.
It would feel like a miracle, a gift from God. No wonder David's writings reflect that experience.
Exactly. And speaking of finding refuge and encountering the divine, the Judean wilderness also holds the secrets of Qumran. But we'll delve into that fascinating location in a future deep dive. For now, let's move beyond the wilderness and explore the region that served as the heartland for much of Israelite history, the Judean hill country.
Okay, I'm ready for a change of scenery. But before we leave the wilderness entirely, you pointed out something else in your notes. Herodium. It's visible from the wilderness, right?
It is, yeah.
Is there a connection there?
There is. Remember how we talked about Herod's ambition and his desire to leave his mark on the land?
Yes.
Well, Herodium, his massive fortress palace, is a testament to that. And its location, so close to Bethlehem.
Right.
The birthplace of David and, according to Christian tradition, Jesus, raises some intriguing questions.
Intriguing questions? Like what?
Well, some scholars believe that Herod's choice to build Herodium so close to Bethlehem was a deliberate attempt to connect himself to the messianic prophecies associated with David's lineage. It's like he was trying to usurp that legacy.
Wow.
To claim a kind of messianic authority for himself.
Wow, that's a pretty bold move. So we're seeing a pattern here with Herod, aren't we?
Yeah.
He's not just building fortresses.
Right.
He's making statements about his power and his place in history.
Exactly. And that's what makes studying ancient Israel so fascinating. The land itself becomes a stage for these power struggles.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
These claims and counterclaims, these attempts to shape the narrative of history.
Okay, I'm definitely getting sense of that. So let's move on from the stark wilderness to, you guessed it, more rocks. This time, it's the Judean hill country. I have to admit, when I think of the hill country, I don't picture a place that's easy to live in.
That's where our preconceived notions can sometimes mislead us. The Judean hill country, while rugged, was actually quite fertile.
Huh.
And offered many advantages for those who knew how to adapt to its unique terrain.
So it's not all barren hills and rocky slopes?
Not at all. It's about understanding the nuances of the landscape. The bedrock here is hard limestone.
Yeah.
Which might not sound promising, but it actually creates a very fertile soil called terra rosa. And this limestone also holds the key to another crucial resource, water.
Wait, water in a limestone landscape? How does that work?
The limestone bedrock is fractured, allowing rainwater to seep underground and create natural springs.
Okay.
These springs were essential for life in the hill country, providing a reliable source of water for both people and livestock. And those deep valleys we mentioned earlier,
yeah,
they actually served as natural collection points for this water, creating fertile pockets within the hill country.
So the Judean hill country, despite its rugged appearance, had these hidden resources that made it a surprisingly good place to live.
Exactly. And the lecture goes on to explain how this geography shapes the history of the region. The fertile land and the natural defenses provided by the hills and valleys made it a strategically valuable area coveted by various groups throughout history.
Right. Mm-hmm. The lecture highlights a few key cities in the Judean hill country. Hebron is the first one that pops up, connected to Abraham, David, and even a rebellion. What's the story there?
Hebron was a hub, both geographically and historically. Remember those natural ridges we talk about? Well, Hebron was situated at the intersection of several, making it easily accessible and strategically important. That's one of the reasons it became a city of refuge, a designated place where people could flee for safety.
A city of refuge. So its location made it a natural safe haven.
Exactly. The surrounding hills and valleys provided a natural barrier, making it difficult for pursuers to reach the city. And its central location meant it was relatively easy to reach for those seeking sanctuary. It's a perfect example of how geography influenced the development of social and legal structures.
That's fascinating. So Hebron's location made it both strategically important and a place of refuge. And the lecture also mentions its connection to Abraham and David.
Yes. According to biblical tradition, Abraham settled near Hebron and even purchased a cave there as a burial site for his family. Centuries later, David made Hebron his first capital before conquering Jerusalem. It highlights the city's enduring significance throughout Israelite history.
So Hebron was a key location for both patriarchs and kings. It's like this one city holds echoes of different eras of biblical history.
And its story doesn't end there. Hebron was also the site of Absalom's rebellion against his father, King David. The hilly terrain surrounding the city played a role in the conflict. offering both Absalom's forces and David's loyalists strategic advantages and hiding places.
So even internal conflicts within the Israelite kingdom were shaped by the geography of the hill country.
Absolutely. The landscape wasn't just a passive backdrop. It actively influenced the course of events, from major historical shifts to internal power struggles.
Okay, so we've got this image of Hebron as a strategic city, a place of refuge, and even a battleground. The lecture then shifts focus to Bethlehem, a town that always seems overshadowed by something much bigger.
You're picking up on a key theme here. Bethlehem, as we know it from the Bible, was indeed a relatively small town in the first century. And looming over it, both literally and figuratively, was Herod the Great's massive fortress palace, Herodium. The contrast is striking, especially when you consider the biblical prophecies about a ruler coming from Bethlehem.
Herodium again. You mentioned earlier that it was visible from the wilderness. It must have been an imposing sight for anyone traveling through the region.
Absolutely. Herodium wasn't just a fortress, it was a statement. Herod literally reshaped the landscape, leveling a mountain to create this monument to himself. And its location, so close to Bethlehem, adds another layer of intrigue.
This might sound like a strange question, but why would Herod choose to build such a massive complex so close to a small, seemingly insignificant town like Bethlehem?
That's a great question, and it's one that scholars have debated for years. Some believe that Herod's choice to build Herodium so close to Bethlehem was a deliberate attempt to connect himself to the messianic prophecies associated with David's birthplace.
You're saying Herod, a Roman-appointed king, might have been trying to tap into those prophecies to claim some kind of messianic authority for himself. That's a bold move.
It is. And whether it was intentional or not, the juxtaposition of Herodium's grandeur with Bethlehem's relative obscurity adds a fascinating layer to the biblical narrative.
It's like Herod's ambition is literally casting a shadow over Bethlehem. It's almost a visual representation of the power dynamics at play in this region.
Exactly. And that interplay of geography and power is a recurring theme throughout ancient Israelite history.
Okay, so we've got fertile land, strategic cities, and even a possible power play by Herod, all happening in the Judean hill country. But the lecture mentions one more town in this region that I'm curious about, Tekoa. Why is that significant?
Tekoa is important because it was the home of the prophet Amos. And here's where the details get really interesting. Amos was both a shepherd and a sycamore fig tender. Those two occupations, combined with the geography of the region, suggest he was likely a migrant worker, traveling with his flocks, and finding additional work where he could.
Hold on, how does his job connect to his message as a prophet?
That's the brilliance of this lecture. It argues that Amos's experience as a migrant worker, moving between the harsher regions and the more fertile areas, shape his perspective on social justice and God's concern for the marginalized. His message wasn't just abstract theology. It was rooted in the realities of the land and the lives of the people he encountered.
So Amos's firsthand experience of the inequalities and hardships faced by those who lived on the margins of society directly fueled his prophetic message.
Precisely. He saw how the land, while capable of providing abundance, could also be a source of hardship and exploitation if not managed justly. And his calls for social justice, for caring for the poor and the vulnerable, echo throughout the Judean hill country and beyond.
That's incredible. We're seeing how the landscape, the climate, even the types of work people did all played a role in shaping the events and ideas that we read about in the Bible. It's like peeling back the layers of history and seeing how everything is interconnected.
You're starting to see the bigger picture, and we're just getting started. Next, we'll journey from the heights of the Judean hill country down to a region that served as a constant battleground between competing powers.
Okay, I'm ready for the next leg of our journey. But before we go, can you give us a little preview of what's to come? What lies beyond the hills?
Imagine a region where rolling hills give way to flatlands, where sandy soil and ancient swamps create both challenges and opportunities. A land coveted by empires and fought over for centuries. We're about to enter the Philistine Plain, a place that will witness face-to-face with some of the Bible's most iconic stories and characters.
That sounds fascinating. I'm eager to see how the geography of this region shaped its history and the lives of the people who lived there. We'll be back in just a moment for part two of our deep dive into ancient Israel. All right, we've explored the Judean wilderness, the hill country, the Philistine plain, and the Shephelah. I feel like we've covered so much ground already, but you wanted to make sure we didn't overlook the Negev. I have to admit, I always thought of it as just empty desert, but your notes mention it was surprisingly active in biblical times. How so?
Well, it's all about adaptation. The Negev wasn't about settling down in one place. It was about moving with the seasons, following the grazing lands. Think of the Bedouin tribes. Even today, they've mastered this way of life for centuries. And the Israelites, during their exodus, they had to learn that nomadic lifestyle too, relying on their faith to guide them through this challenging landscape.
That's a great point. It completely changes my perspective on the Negev. It wasn't just an empty wasteland. It was a place where people learned to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature.
Exactly. And the Negev wasn't completely isolated either. While it wasn't known for large urban centers like those we saw in the Shefla or the Hill Country, it did have strategically important settlements, often located along trade routes or near vital water sources.
Trade routes. That suggests the Negev was more connected to the outside world than we might imagine.
Absolutely. The Negev was a key link in trade networks that spanned from Egypt and the Sinai Peninsula all the way up to the Mediterranean coast. It was a land of caravans and merchants, transporting goods and ideas across vast distances. Imagine those long camel trains winding their way through the desert, carrying spices, textiles, and precious metals.
It's like the Negev was a hidden highway connecting different cultures and civilizations. It's amazing to think about the stories those traders could tell, the experiences they shared, the things they saw along the way.
It really captures the imagination, doesn't it? And remember, the Israelites themselves journeyed through the Negev during their exodus from Egypt. It was a formative experience, a time of testing and hardship, but also a time of divine guidance and provision.
It makes you wonder what those 40 years in the wilderness were really like. To experience that kind of vastness, that sense of isolation and dependence on God, it must have shaped their identity in profound ways.
It certainly did. And the Negev also played a role in the stories of biblical figures like Abraham and Isaac. They both spent time in this region, interacting with local inhabitants and establishing covenants with God in this unique and often unforgiving landscape. It's almost as if the challenges of the Negev forced them to rely more heavily on their faith.
So we're seeing a different side of the Negev now, not just an empty desert, but a land with its own history, its own challenges and opportunities, and its own connections to the broader biblical narrative.
Exactly. And speaking of connections, we can't forget the Sinai Peninsula, just south of the Negev. It's a region deeply intertwined with the story of the Israelites, especially their encounter with God at Mount Sinai.
Mount Sinai, the place where Moses received the Ten Commandments, that's a pivotal moment in biblical history, not just for the Israelites, but for the development of Western law and morality.
Absolutely. The Sinai Peninsula, with its dramatic mountains and rugged terrain, holds a special place in the hearts and minds of many. It's a land associated with divine revelation, spiritual transformation, and the forging of a covenant between God and his people. Imagine standing at the foot of Mount Sinai, feeling the weight of history and the presence of something greater than yourself.
It must have been an awe-inspiring experience, one that changed the course of history.
It certainly did. And it's a fitting reminder that sometimes the most profound encounters happen in the most unexpected places.
You know, it's funny. We started this deep dive by talking about the Judean wilderness as a testing ground. But it seems like every region we've explored has served as a testing ground in its own way. Whether it's the physical challenges of the landscape or the cultural clashes between different groups, the land itself seems to have pushed people to their limits and forced them to confront their deepest beliefs.
That's a brilliant observation. And it's one of the key takeaways from this entire deep dive. The geography of ancient Israel wasn't just a backdrop for historical events. It was an active force shaping the lives, beliefs, and destinies of its people.
I feel like I've gained a much richer understanding of the Bible and its historical context. It's not just about names and dates anymore. It's about real people grappling with real challenges in a real place.
That's exactly what we hope to achieve. By understanding the geography, we can unlock a deeper level of meaning and appreciation for the stories and events that have shaped our world.
This has been an incredible journey. We've gone from deserts to fertile hills, from battlegrounds to sacred mountains. We've explored the lands of patriarchs, kings, prophets, and even giants. And we've seen how the land itself has played a role in shaping faith, culture, and history.
It's been a privilege to guide you through this exploration. And remember, this is just a glimpse into the rich tapestry of this historical land. There's always more to discover, more connections to make, and more insights to uncover. Happy exploring.